Did it see a warning earlier?
All right, it is a special meeting of the Board of Directors of the Groveland Community Services District on November 5th, 2018. It's 9 a.m. and we'll call the meeting to order with the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We'll have a roll call. Robert Swan is present. John Armstrong appears not to be here. Have we heard from John?
I have not.
Okay. Spencer Edwards.
I'm here.
Janice Bukowski.
Here.
And Nancy Mora.
Also present.
So we have four directors present. That is a quorum. First order of business to approve the order of agenda. And I will just move that we approve the order of agenda. Moving second to approve the order of agenda. Is there any comment? Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? So we have unanimous approval of that, 4-0. And now we have modified our procedure. This will be the first time we're doing this, since we're going to have public comments, even at special meetings, because we can do that. So the public may speak at this time on any item that is not on the agenda, but that is within the jurisdiction of this board. We want you to understand that we are listening carefully. No action will be taken by the board at this time. The board will only hear questions. No responses or answers will be provided. Any item that requires lengthy discussion or board action should be submitted in writing to the district secretary. So be placed on the future agenda. This will enable the meeting to proceed with decorum. Thank you. Is there any public comment? Yes, ma'am.
I would like to speak.
Huh?
I would like to talk.
Please do.
Can I just sit here? And
or you can stand. You can use the podium if you want to.
Okay,
you can
I will.
Sit there.
So formal. Thank you. Thank you for the chance to speak. And my name is Michelle Clement. My parents have had a home here in Pine Mountain Lake for 40 years, and I have many great memories of Pine Mountain, and have always said that someday I would live up here. About 4 weeks ago, that dream came true. I was extremely eager to get out of the Bay Area, and my dad was begging me to be up here as they're aging, and he wanted a family member close. We had come up several times to look for just the right house, and we settled on the 18th tee home because we had always loved the way the house sat on the golf course. We saw the house a few times, but every time we were quite put off by the home's bad odor. The owners told us they had never smelled any odor, but looking back, it was quite suspicious that every room had air fresheners and tons of potpourri. I figured that we had planned to do interior remodeling, so any odor would be addressed through new paint, new floors, etc. So we went ahead and excitedly purchased a new house. Our first night in the house, we had to leave and go to my parents because the smell was so bad we could not take it. We left all the windows open to air it out, and the next night it was almost worse. I quickly learned that we were on a septic system, something I had no experience with, and immediately began to research on the plan of action to rid the house of the stench. I had a plumber come out and inspect all the vents, key traps, etc., and everything passed inspection. I had the propane company come out and inspect the lines. This all passed as well. I called El Dorado Septic to come out and inspect the tank and pump the tank at $900, so as to be absolutely sure I was checking every possible source of this frustrating problem. The one constant was that every evening at about 6 p.m., the entire area from the clubhouse all the way down to Reed Circle was stifling with the stench of sewage. This has been the case every evening since we've moved in 4 weeks ago. If we keep all the windows and doors closed, we can eliminate the foul air from filling the house. If we crack a window or open the garage, the odor fills the house and does not dissipate. Anyone who visits the following day when the front door is open grimaces at the bad smell in our house. We have started to get physically sick in the evening as the smell has become unendurable. In the past 3 weeks, after talking to many people, I have learned that the lift station on Tannehill and Pleasant View Drive has always been a problem for years. Some say that Pine Mountain has a reputation of being smelly. I have begun research into the workings of this particular lift station, and I have started a conversation with the California EPA, the Air Resources Board, Environmental Health Hazard Board, and Tuolumne County Supervisor as to what actions can be taken to finally solve the problem of this lift station. I know that the GCSD is regulated by California permits, but it has become my mission to get to the heart of who governs the workings of the GCSD and why this public health hazard has been allowed to be a big problem for so long. If the problem of stench is because this lift station is too large for the GSD to cope with, and a solution cannot be found to eliminate this terrible problem, and spraying cherry scent over it is not eliminating the problem, then maybe another agency should take over. I'm here this morning for three reasons. One is to put on the regular agenda the problem of this lift station odors, which occur every evening at 6 p.m., which I'm guessing is when the pumps turn on. Number two, a referendum to have every real estate agency disclose the smell of this lift station until a final solution can be implemented. And finally, I would like to invite each one of you to my house at 6 p.m. for a cup of tea, to have you breathe these odors and see how your stomach feels, and see if you can honestly tell me that living with this unbearable stench would be acceptable to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, what's your unit and lot number, ma'am?
166.
Unit 1, lot 66?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, is there any other public comment? Yes, ma'am?
I have a question about a public meeting that supposedly took place on October 30th, or may have taken place and wasn't posted. Anyone know where I found it? In the resolution for the two contracts. And it seems to me if you were holding, and it was supposed to be to open, to look at the bids and open them and reference the bids, et cetera.
It's not a public meeting. That was a bid submission, right?
Yeah, they're
it's
open.
It's a public opening.
It's open door. The public can come in, contractors can come in.
But if nobody knows about it, it's not on the website anywhere. It's not posted. So.
Well, it's not a board meeting.
I understand.
It's just a thing that management does.
But if you're going to be transparent, shouldn't it at least have been posted on the website? There was a public meeting and we could have looked at the contracts and looked at the bids at that point in time. Because you're gonna approve that stuff today, and nobody
had a chance to look at it, I guess.
We'll talk about it on the agenda.
Yeah, I mean, that is the topic of today's meeting, so let's keep that in mind.
Okay,
well,
yeah,
certainly,
okay.
I hadn't crossed my mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Brown Act relates specifically to board meetings, and that's not a board meeting, but it's a reasonable point
to
discuss.
Thank you.
Is there anything else? Any other public comment? Yes, ma'am? Are you waving your hand, or?
Me?
Yes.
No.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Just holding my pen.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Any progress on my rate issues, the averaging?
We had some discussion about that.
Yeah, we said we were going to update the ordinance. Excuse me, I'm sorry. And that we were going to take the issue up at that time in conjunction with other aspects of the ordinance.
It would we're reviewing the ordinance. I mean, we have to be a change to the ordinance, because it's in the ordinance.
Right.
So we have a couple of other things that we want to consider at the same time. So we had some discussion about it.
Okay.
Nothing has happened yet.
Any kind of time frame for when you work on the ordinance?
Yeah, I mean, I can throw a number out there, but I would say we'll probably take it up within the next 6 months back to the board. I mean, if we want to turn it over to legal counsel and have them work on it at their billing rate, that's one thing. But it's a very significant document when it comes to when it comes to the update. And it's really best written internally, and this hasn't been updated in a long time. I mean, it hasn't been overall rewritten.
So we'll have to discuss that probably at the regular meeting. I mean, we can talk about the schedule for that. We should understand where we're standing on that, and maybe we can explicate what it is that will be changing. Because we're talking about re-looking at connection, the whole fee structure hasn't been examined for a year, quite a long time. And so it's kind of an overhaul of the whole fee structure.
Well, we changed the fee structure significantly in the last 2 years.
Rates, yes.
The rates.
But not the other, there's a lot of other, the sure, fees, the other kinds of fees.
So it's clear that you can deal with one issue at a time. You don't have to take them all on.
Well, it's just making the change to the ordinance requires, sorry, we're answering your question, and we're not supposed to do that at this point. But I take your, we will, let's make sure that we have a discussion of that.
We'll have it on the...
At the regular meeting.
At the regular meeting agenda, discussion of the schedule and process for updating the ordinance.
Yeah. Okay.
That will be what the second week in December?
That's next week.
Next Tuesday. Okay, is there any other public comment? All right, moving on to the action items. We have two of them relating to work that we're planning to have done. Adoption of a resolution of the Board of Directors of the Groveland Community Service District approving a notice of award to Moyle Excavation Incorporated, the lowest responsive bidder for the Paredes Road water and sewer line repairs. And I'm just going to start by mentioning I sent PETA a note over the weekend when we were looking at this, because I have a couple of questions. One of them, for me, is why in the world is there such a big discrepancy in the bids? The packet obviously doesn't contain every single thing that was involved in all the bids, so I can't answer that question. And the second had to do with what is the actual schedule. And that I have the same question on both items.
Okay.
Is there any of the board members have anything that they wanted to just bring up before we get into the discussion here?
We're talking about the Ferretti Road. And
right now, the first one is the Ferretti Road one.
Yeah, intersection Ferretti Road and SR-120 right down here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there is. That was going to be one of the things I brought up, was one bid is $246,000 and the lowest bid is $39,000. Mm-hmm. Major difference.
So I'm just going to ask you, Jim.
That was going to be my question, too.
Maybe
so.
You could just spark on this.
I'll make sure I address that in my discussion.
Oh, okay. All right, so we will turn it over to you to present.
Okay. So the district is governed by the Public Contract Code. We've talked about this a few times, but it's a very complex web of requirements that we have to go through for contracting for public works projects. And these are works of improvement or works of maintenance, major maintenance or infrastructures go through a specific process, and that involves contractor notification, it involves publications, and it involves the preparation of plans and specifications so that the contractors know exactly what they're bidding on. There's no, we know exactly what the outcome is that we want, including, for example, with Ferretti Road, the fact that the contractor is going to need to coordinate with the county's contractor. There has to be specific timelines, notifications, as well as processes and construction standards. Those are all outlined to the contractor. Most contractors will receive their plans and specifications through a plan center, which is a plan house. They go, they belong to these, they pay a membership fee, they go in, they get these plans, or they might have them emailed or mailed or pick them up, but they get the plans and specifications, and the process is that there is a specified period of time typically between 14 and 30 days of time for review of the plans and specifications before a bid is due. We have to make the bid process, the bid date, very clear to the contractor, so you see it a dozen places throughout the contract documents or throughout the plans and specifications, so that the contractors know exactly when and where the bids are due. You'd think that would be an easy thing, but contractors will show up right at the time that they're due. They're filling out the paperwork in the parking lot, signing it. You know, they've got their bonds. They walk in and present their bids. They are, because they're public works projects and because there are there's mandatory public processes in the way that the contracts are bid. In other words, they have to go out to a certain in a certain manner, like I talked about, to the plan centers and published, that the bids are then opened and publicly read. Okay, that's the intent of the law, is that any of the contractors can be there, none of the contractors can be there. It's basically just open door, sit down, tabulate the bids, open the bids, and then it's always the same thing. Contractors want to know who's the apparent low bidder, and then they might ask a question like, I'd like to get a copy of the bid results, and then they'll walk out, and that's pretty much about it. There's nothing else done that day. Sometimes you might put the bids down in a spreadsheet while you're sitting there, but you don't award a contract. You've got many steps that you've got to go through. You've got to compare each line item. You've got to make sure that you've got to go through and check and make sure they've submitted the required technical documents and administrative documents that they're supposed to. So that has been done over the last few days prior to Friday, from the time that the bids were open until Friday, confirmed that all the documentation was there. And we're required by the public contract code to award to the lowest responsible bidder. Okay, and that means the lowest bidder that meets the qualifications and requirements of the job, and that in our case, it's that they're appropriately licensed, that they've got the appropriate experience that we've called for, and that they are registered with the Department of Industrial Relations, and that they've submitted the required bonding for the project. So the apparent low bidder, Moyle Construction, submitted all the right documentation. They submitted the bid bond and those things because they are required, when they are the low bidder, they're required to enter into contract with the district for the work, even if they missed it by $150,000. They're required to enter into contract with the district, and if they don't, if they refuse, then that bid bond, which is 10% of the amount that they bid, is supposed to be there to be able for us to be able to go to the next highest bidder, and award it. And in this case, there I have no doubt that Moyle intends to enter into contract with the district. They did not misbid the project. That is, we knew that the actual work of construction was going to be somewhere between $40,000 and $80,000 for that work, just depending on how complex the contractor thought it would be. So when you look at the bids that were submitted, and I'll take you right to that the bid schedule. The numbers for mobilization, sewer line repair, water line repair, and the interim water line repairs are all consistent with what we would have expected to see with a contractor that was not concerned about coordinating with another contractor. Some of them, I believe the bids for some of these other contractors are because they knew they weren't going to be working on the road, and they know how it is to work with another contractor on a project a public works project like this, especially going into winter, some other coordination things that they had concerns about. They really didn't, obviously really didn't want the project. Most of them were bidding the Flume project as well. So let me just finish up real quick, Spencer.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I provided in the staff report the summary of all the bids. Kind of flabbergasted with Pro Builders' bid that's double what the other ones were. And Moyle Excavation, I'm absolutely certain that they can get the work done for that amount of money and make a profit. Have not had any concerns with their work. Even if we had concerns, we'd still have to award it to them. We just have to inspect it and watch what's going on. So the recommendation is that we award the contract for that work. The schedule, you asked about schedule for that. That's dependent on the county's contractor specifically. We have 10 days to respond once the contractor for the road, the county's contractor for the road, says, okay, we're ready for the water line. And that's going to be at a time when they've excavated out the old culvert, they've got the new culvert set, they've filled back in to the subgrade right underneath the road, and then our contractor comes in and actually trenches, you know, as if we were installing a new line in undisturbed earth. Because that way, the contractor for the road can prove that they have adequate compaction over the entire culvert area. They'll prove that, then we'll come in and excavate and do the water and sewer line, and we have to recompact and retest those trenches. So that's a specification. Once we get going on the work, we have, I believe it was it 5 days, 5 continuous days?
It was 10.
10 for the notification from the contractor. Anyway, we can't hold the county's contractor up. They've got to work continuously until they get it done. I expect it'll probably take 2 days in all reality, maybe 3 if they have to do additional work as far as compaction for Moyle to get this job done.
Okay. The performance bond on this then for them is that they will complete this in, I mean, is there a time limit on?
There is.
On how long they have to do the work?
Right. Yeah. It's within the contract documents. I'd have to pull it up, but it's been coordinated with the county and with the county's contract. I believe between the notification period, because they have to mobilize once mm-hmm. they're notified, and the county's contractor will notify them as soon as they know they're going to be done ready for the work. They're not going to get done and then notify and wait 10 days. The contractor, the Ford Construction for the county, is going to look out into the future and say, on this date, we're going to be ready for you. And then that will be notification to our contractor, to Moyle, to get it mobilized and be ready to go. And then they've got, I believe, a total of 15 days between the two. I mean, I can look at the specifications, but it's
same year in the contract.
No, it's because it's in the project package in the specifications.
Can we see that? Where's that? Is that in here? Or no, it's not in anything here, right?
No.
Okay.
It's another.
Okay.
It's the.
That's right.
The.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, in essence, you're saying these Pro Builders and ECAS.
Hang on a second. Can you have the specifications? Just so we can address the schedule.
No, I'm sorry. So you're saying, in essence, like Pro Builders and ECAS may have overbid because they didn't really want the jobs, what
right.
you were saying?
But they were just so busy, they're throwing a number out there, and if they got it, great. But
do they get, you know, if the guys, if those builders, do they get, like, credits or check marks or attaboys for bidding on public works projects? Okay, well, all right. And then my next question is, have we answered your question? Did you?
We haven't gotten to that yet.
You haven't gotten to that yet. Okay. Then,
well, okay. Well, I did. I said it's the notification is to the bidders.
Right.
The bids being publicly opened and read is to the bidders. It's a staff exercise. It's typically done by the district engineer, but we didn't pay him to come up from Fresno to sit down with us and open the bids.
So basically, since we're talking about it, would there be any particular reason why we shouldn't announce that that's going to happen? I mean, it is public, right?
It's in the project specifications. It's
well, yeah, the bidders know that. I'm wondering about the public. The public, not the bidder public. If people, I mean, I have no interest to come in and listen to you read the bids, but if somebody really wants to, would there be any fundamental reason why we shouldn't? You can't I mean, you understand there's no interaction. There right. wouldn't be any comment period or anything like that. This is just reading the bids yeah. out loud to anybody that happens to be there.
Yeah. No, it's just another to-do. I'd like to have a policy on it. I've never seen a public agency advertise it as a, it would be like if we're meeting with our district engineer.
I know.
To go over a project, it's really no different because we're notifying the contractors that the bids will be publicly opened and read. That's really all it is. But if you want to have a policy that requires that we put out a notification, it's not a board meeting.
Just be on the website, I suppose. I mean, I wouldn't be thinking about a large formal notification process.
Are we saying publicly open as opposed to secretly open, correct?
As opposed to contractors, you can't come in the room. Because this is not,
right.
it's not,
right.
this is not
right.
a public
so
exercise.
It's not a public exercise.
No.
Just like meeting with the, engineer would not be a public exercise,
right.
just like the board members weren't here. I mean, it wasn't, you know,
right.
there's a lot of public things that go on, right, only meaning that it's not a secret thing. I mean, meaning it's not a secret bid, we're only going to take your bid in the back room and open them, don't anybody come, it's all by mail, you know, that kind of open the bid. That didn't happen. It was everybody can... All the contractors can be here. The staff was here. You know, the engineer could have come if we wanted to pay him.
Yeah.
That type of
right.
open door, not necessarily public meeting.
I know there are some bids that are not opened publicly, and I've never been involved with one. I wouldn't know what that was. Specifically for, as far as you know, why you would not invite the contractors in, but it is specifically saying to the contractor that we intend to read the bids, and it's just kind of a rite of passage. Contractors show up, they sit there, they listen to the numbers, they question, and sometimes they'll say, "I think we're going to file a protest." You know, if they feel that something has been done wrong or whatever, but that's pretty it's pretty straightforward. It's just another thing to do.
Well, to clarify, just to be, I take if I'm understanding correctly, we'll get to you in a second. Mm-hmm. But just to be, even though the term public meeting was used, it's not. It's an office staff function. I mean, it's like I just want to make an analogy. Mm-hmm. When they're doing payroll, we don't, you know, it's not a secret, but we don't invite public to come in and watch people write checks. I mean, it's a staff function.
Right.
That's all.
So
okay.
So okay, if I may.
Go ahead.
So perhaps it's just a matter of changing the verbiage in the resolution so that people who read it aren't under the expectation that, oh, okay, it's a public meeting, I can just go and see what they're talking about, right? So perhaps it's just changing and adding the words that it's public for the contractors to come in and share their bids. If you need to know where it is.
Publicly, yeah, it says publicly. Yeah, is there another way, maybe, that's a good point.
Yes,
it doesn't, even need to be, doesn't really need to even be on there, but,
okay.
You know, the where bids were come. Open. Yeah. It's just... It flows off of my
resolution, okay.
My tongue. It flows off my brain just because I've done it so many times. But
well, we do it. Well, for number one, it doesn't say a meeting. It says they were publicly open, not in a public meeting, because the language for the contracting code says you got to do this, 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 and this. And so what the resolution is just saying is we did this, this, and this, and we abided by it, and that's the language that's used. So that's why it's in there. So it's not saying it was a meeting, it's just saying that they have to be publicly opened. Just for clarification, that's why it's listed in there, because it's like checking off the boxes of the procedure saying, this is what the law requires, the district did all of these things.
Sure. I just want to say I have been at meetings, I have been to these where they've opened them up in the past, where you've opened the bids up publicly, it's just a matter of just posting it, you don't need a formal thing. The other thing, and that was for Reservoir 2 and for the parking lot out there, which this contractor did. So I was in, came in to see what was going on. So it's not a big deal, I don't think you need to formally change that. And when you finish this, I have another question that I wrote down. Do you want it now or do you want it later?
No, I think so. I don't know. We said we were going to get to the motion second, Bob, and then address the public questions.
Yes,
and we've kind of been going.
Okay.
Yes, there's the order.
That's why I'm asking.
Okay, so we've... Did anybody...
Did you make the motion?
I haven't yet.
No.
We're just going through the preliminary discussion and getting it. So I just want to be quick. So on the... There was no... In the case where the bids were so different from each other... Wasn't like this was all in one segment. I mean, it's not like Pro Builders charged $100,000 for mobilization or something like that. I mean, there was no obvious thing. They just everything was just jacked up.
It's across the board. I mean, there's.
So they just threw some numbers out and they were all higher because they weren't terribly serious about trying to win the contract. I, that's all I want to understand, because it is kind of a big gap between the winning bid and everything else.
Yeah, I think the two middle bidders were expecting to make a good chunk of money, but were probably more reasonable. I think Moyle is low on this bid, but they're not so low that it's risky. You know that they're not going to make a money.
And you said earlier. So the independent, I think that wasn't actually in Alfonso's report, but we talked about it at one. We've talked about it before. The internal estimate of what this should be, what you expected this to come at, was somewhere between 40,000 and 80,000.
Right.
And so it is.
So let me address the schedule real quick, because I have that in front of me now. So we. I was just reversed in my head. 5 days notice prior to having the work done. In other words, we'll provide them, GCSD will provide the contractor notice to install the pipe 5 days prior to commencing the work. Contractor shall commence work on the date provided by GCSD and complete the installation, including backfill compaction within 10 working days, okay? Now, if the day that they start, it starts to rain and just keeps on raining, each day you document. You know, it's a rain day, it's not a work day. But the county's contract would extend as well. Contractor shall request any required water main shutoff. The contractor shall notify GCSD at least 2 days ahead of any required inspections. And we'll be coordinating with them directly on it.
Okay, 10 days, and allowing for the fact that there might be days that were considered not to be days because of rain or something like that. If they don't get it done in 10 days, they forfeit the performance. I just want to understand how this works.
Well, okay. There are $500 a day liquidated damages. You know, which is a penalty to them. And the dilemma that you have is, you know, we would need to get, if they are not complying with that 10-day requirement, because, again, it's 10 working days, so they're out there, the weather's conducive, things are okay. It's not that their equipment breaks down or any of that. It's still a working day, and it's ticking off. Let's say we get 5 days into it, they don't show up, whatever. We're going to be communicating with them in writing, demanding that they get with the job. The problem with using the performance bonds is that it's just going to take, it takes a little bit more time. The best way is to get the contract out there to get the work.
This is something we've never, at least in the time I've been here, we've never really sort of discussed how this process works.
Right.
So I wanted to get some...
I've never had a contractor, I've never had an experience where a contractor did not perform on a public works project.
And of course, you'd rather liquidated damages, because if you actually tell them to stop working and collect the performance bond, then you've got to find another contractor.
Right.
I mean, that's a, that's a big argument in favor of not doing that. At a very awkward time.
Yeah, at a difficult time to get it done.
Okay, so that's the procedure.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, did all four of the contractors come in, were they all present at the bid opening?
I want to say three out of the four were here.
Pro builders.
Because to me that would be another indication they just threw a number out and
Do you think that this repair will be done in time for that line to be available for the tunnel shutdown? I know that water line's critical during that period. You think it'll be done in time for the tunnel shutdown? What do you guys think?
So if it weather permits, we should be good to go.
Okay, good. Good. Because I know it's a big, it's critical in delivery of water. So
it's the main line.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, any other questions right now? All right, so, in the interest of moving forward, I will. We're going to make the motion after we make the motion.
Okay.
So, I'm going to move that we adopt Resolution 34-18. Resolution of the Board of Directors of Groveland Community Services District approving notice of award to Moyle Excavation Incorporated, the lowest responsive bidder for the Peretti Road water and sewer line repairs. I'm not going to read the entire resolution, but it basically says that the general manager is authorized to issue the notice of award to execute the construction contract in the amount of $39,500. And to negotiate construction change orders in an amount not to exceed 15% increase in the original bid, and basically to manage the contract. I don't think there's anything too striking in there. Is there a second?
I will second that.
Okay,
understand, though, I can withdraw my second, right, if I needed to? Is that how this works?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay.
Okay. Or you can just vote against it.
I kind of doubt I'm going to do that, but I mean, if push came to shove, I was saying that more for public, you know.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 34-18 as described previously. Is there any public comment?
I'm just wondering, just because they're registered with the Department of Industrial Relations, does that mean that the contractor is paying prevailing wage?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Anything over $1,000.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. And second of all, this change order, or it says here the change order could be 15%. They did work for us before. Was that also 15% or was that 10% in the change order? The change order that you'll allow.
for the work?
With the parking lot and this, the last contract that they had, the resolution was 10%.
Okay, so why is this one 15%?
Because we determined that legally, so long as the work that they are doing and doing under a change order is consistent with the work that they're being contracted to do, that the limitations don't apply on the it's a technical issue. We don't have to limit the amount of change orders. If they're hired to do this replacement work and they go in to replace that 100 feet of pipe, and when they start connecting to it, it breaks, and they go back another 50 feet and they connect to it and it breaks, that maybe they wind up replacing 600 feet instead of 100 feet. The change orders, we would use the per unit price and increase the contract to get the work done. And because it was already bid and because we have a unit price on it, we don't have to limit the change orders.
Does that mean there could be more than one change order? You can have
100 dozens.
And they're each going to be 15% of...
No. No, what all I'm asking for here in this resolution is authorization to exceed the contract amount by 15%.
By 15% total, no matter. Oh, okay, so, that's all. I just wanted to make sure.
My guess would be a shorter answer is he thinks maybe this is a little sketchier. There might be more likelihood of changes, and so you want a little more flexibility than we had on the parking lot.
Okay, just remember seeing 10%. That's what.
Any other public comment? Yes, ma'am.
I didn't get an agenda, but I was wanting to know your name and what your position was.
Pete Kappa, general manager.
General manager.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Should you
get your name? I'll give you this one. I printed mine out. Want
me to give you
this one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay, is there any further public comment? Yes, ma'am.
One thing. I just noticed in the past that when we've had years ago work done, and if contractors come in with a low amount, they have to large change orders. So, but that 15% is locking them in. Just making sure, right? Locks the contractor in.
It's locking
the contractor in. That's what I'm saying.
No, the contractor is locked into their bid amount.
So the 15%.
No, contractor's locked into their bid.
Plus 15%.
No. That's giving me authorization.
If they say we need a change order, or if he says we need a change order,
right?
Until there's a change order, there's just the contract.
Right. But if the contractor
can't initiate a change order, the contractor can.
Request.
He can request it, yeah. but only he can initiate a change order.
Scope of work.
It's a scope of work change, or it's a change order. And he can, so it locks him into not being able to do that for more than 15% of the face value of the contract.
In reality, it's a little bit, the more conversation we have about this, the more risky it feels to me. Because on this particular project, I'll tell you that if the contractor is working on something out there and we need to increase the scope to get out of the county's contractor's way, I'm going to probably authorize what needs to be done and then come back to the board and say, we had an emergency condition and we had to do this. And maybe exceed that 15%. You know, I mean, I just have that in there just because there's no magic to that number. Other than there may be, a valve cover or some other little, $100,000, $500,000 thing associated with this project that while they're out there, we want to get done. But if it hits the fan and I've got to get them out of that road before the county's contractor starts to charge them $5,000 a day or $10,000 a day or whatever, I'm going to get them out of the road. And then I'll come back to the board and say, this is specifically what happened under the emergency condition. But so just to be clear about the way that works.
Thank you. Just wanted to make sure. This is
a project we have to do. This is not a thing where we can quibble about getting it finished. But, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
But, okay, any further public comment? Do you look interested?
Interested, but I, seems okay to me.
Is there any further discussion from the board? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, so we have 4-0 approval of resolution 34-18. Now we move and do the same thing again for resolution, what the heck it is. Sorry, I have to get to the resolution. 35-18, I'm guessing.
Which is much the same sort of thing, except with a much larger dollar.
I'll just write the information.
So the same kinds of questions that I had about this, about that one, pertain also here, since there's also a fairly large, although not quite as large, a fairly large swing between the low bid. You know, what actually is, I'm most curious about is between the low bid and the next lowest bid, which is, you know, still 100%.
Where are these contractors located? I know Boyle is located in Jamestown. What about the Ford and the third?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I'd have to look at their documents, their full bid sheet might have it handy.
Okay, did the labor rates change between bidders?
What's that?
For the labor rates. I know we have to pay prevailing wage. So let's say, for instance, one of these contractors was in San Francisco.
It's not based on the contractor, it's based on the location of the work.
Prevailing wage here.
But it's not, but we're not, it's not prevailing wage in Groveland. It's we will most likely, I believe it's the Bay Area prevailing wage.
Unfortunately.
That applies here.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's set by the state. Says this is your prevailing wage. wait a second. Actually, we're going to do Ford first. I'm sorry. Try to do what we said we were going to do. I get sloppy sometimes.
Well, this is the first time we're doing it.
So, is there any, in your recollection, was there any obvious reason why Moyle was able to come in at half the, for not half, $100,000 lower than Pro Builders?
I don't know. It's the bid is pretty much as I had predicted. The unit price for the actual gunite work or shotcrete work, which is a big number, approaching half of the cost of the contractor's bid, is. Moyle's cost was the one place that they were higher. So others that are larger contractors were getting better deals for that type of work. But Moyle was much less on mobilization on almost every other line item, and many of them by half. This is directly in line with the engineer's estimate for the work.
The 425 is?
What's that?
Moyle's 425 is right in line with it?
Okay. Yep.
So, all right. So another item. Oh, sorry.
Well, just for giggles, I just Googled them in Pro Builders. Not to say they don't have little subsidiaries. Said they were from Orangevale, located in Orangevale, southwest in Riverside.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's going to add.
Yeah.
And they specialize in these ditches too, in concrete lined canals, ditches, that stuff.
So, just to clarify for us, or at least for me, so the base bid, the number we're talking about here is the base bid, and then we have the upper boom bid.
Yes.
Is that something where we would having another resolution to approve spending that money?
Unfortunately,
is this a while they're there kind of thing? Or?
It is. It's also to meet the requirements of the funding source. Cal OES is, FEMA is paying for a portion of the lower section. It's basically, this project is broken down into, we'll call it thirds. There's the lowest section, which is FEMA, lowest meaning closest to this building.
Right.
Then the next section was damaged more in this year's flood, so that's Cal OES. And then you go up above the road crossing, and there's that upper, there's an upper 300 and some odd feet section that's much flatter, and not as much damage, but Cal OES has not been interested in funding it yet. They came back out and took another look at it, took some more pictures, they found out some more information about other work that we had intended to do as part of it that, you know, that was damaged by the 2018 floods. The dilemma is it wasn't constructed very well to begin with. So it's really obvious that most of the failures occurred because it just didn't have any reinforcing, and it was too thin and too left trees there, so roots popped the concrete. So we separated that out because we wanted to get a price on it, so that in the event that Cal OES came in and said, okay, we'll give you a portion of it, that we had that and we could then issue a change
order. So right now that bid addition is essentially just information. It's not, I mean, we couldn't hold, we're not going to hold, there's no way we can hold them to that bid.
We will. We can. In other words, if on the 13th of this month, between now and the 13th, we have notice from Cal OES that they're going to fund it at 50% or something, that I would be bringing that back to the board to add that, add authorization to issue a change order, and it would be consistent with their bid. It would be the amount listed on their bid would be the amount that we would award it for.
Did the other two construction companies also have a bid for the upper flume?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we don't know what that portion's not shared on the front page of this resolution or the staff report.
That's all we're approving. We don't have the money for the upper one, as it stands. You know,
We could right now that wouldn't be something we could afford to.
We will save a little bit of money by having the contractor that's out here not mobilize again to do it again. And once they're in the bottom of that thing and they're ripping and tearing and reshaping and all that, it makes sense for them to move up to that upper section. However, that's a lot of money for the value that we get right now. The lower section is really thrashed and really needs to be replaced. The upper section is damaged. It's as much because the trees are right next to it as it is because of the flood. So we need to get over time, we'll get the trees out of there, we'll put this out to bid again. I don't expect the cost to go up that much. Unless Cal OES comes in and says, here's some money. Okay. Then we'll come back to the board.
Okay. And what is the schedule on this that they've agreed to?
I hear it printing. I believe it's 120 days, longer period of time just because of what it is.
Oh, it's a big project.
It's a much bigger project, and it's also, we expect that we're going to have some delays with rain. Again, that doesn't count. The 145 days is actual work days. Days that they should be working. We document that, and we expect there'll be no problem with getting it done within that time. But the project has to be completed by, it's 18 months from the date of the incident, unless we ask for an extension. So that's the target, is the 18 months from the March 22nd.
Cal OES.
Cal OES. Yeah, so FEMA, we already had to extend. FEMA, what was interesting is they didn't issue the notice of award until April. And the notice of the actual determination, here's the money, until April of this year. And the contract, the time period for that FEMA funding actually ran out, I believe, in July. Yeah. But we had, so we extended it. We extended that it could be
year?
Consistent.
It
yeah, it's 100.
Year, half
in March,
No. The FEMA approval was for the flume failure
the
from
2017.
Okay. 2017.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I didn't even realize.
Yeah, I know. It's
springs of 2017.
It's two sources of funding. It's FEMA and Cal OES. The 2017 disaster actually qualified for FEMA funding, which means that portion of the work is paid 100%. But that's just one chunk. That's there's $105,000 that Cal OES has got into the 2018 project that we're going to wind up paying 25% out of pocket. I thought you were standing up for to
raise a question.
Yeah.
Not yet.
So it's 100, time for completion is 120 working days.
Okay.
And again, we don't expect it to take that long. But the reason that you set that timeline is obviously to be able to make sure that the contractor performs, and if they don't, then there's liquidated damages as well.
Okay, any other board questions? Does anyone want to make a motion?
I make a motion that we accept resolution 35-18, the Groveland Community Services District approving notice of award to Moyle Excavation Incorporated, the lowest responsive bidder for the flume renovation project. And with your permission, I'll not read every word in the resolution.
The terms, I'll just mention that the authorization to the general manager in this resolution is exactly the same as the one we discussed previously.
That's right.
Is there any public comment?
Do
we have, oh, sorry, didn't we have a second?
No.
Okay, we have a second. Moved and seconded to adopt this resolution 35-18 as previously discussed. And now, public comment.
A question about this. So the total funding was 483,549, but you can only use 75% of that?
No, because it's a combination of FEMA funds and state funds. There's FEMA and state money that combine to fund 100% of the cost of a portion of the work.
Well, that's my question. So there's a total funding of 483, but you can't apply it this work, otherwise
not the whole thing. They can only apply the
$300,000 of FEMA money is 100%.
Right. But the rest you can only apply a certain percentage.
No, we will get the work done and they'll write us a check for 75% of it. That's how it works.
Of the
we document the cost of the work.
$184,000 will end up paying 25% of that.
Oh, okay.
I think. Is that right?
Yeah.
$300 gets paid at 100%.
Yes.
And the other 126.
Or whatever it is. 300,483 minus, oh, that's funding, not cost. Sorry, yes, that, yeah. So or maybe we'll have a 15% cost overrun, but whatever we end up spending beyond the $300,000, we'll have to pay 25%.
But you couldn't arbitrarily apply the leftover, right? This would be a bunch of money left over.
58,000.
To the next project, which is the other fund.
You'd never know, but probably not. I mean, I don't know how Cal OES is. I'm just going to say we've had things where we've done stuff that was funded through DWR, where they did in fact let us roll over unspent money into other stuff, but there's no guarantee of that.
Okay.
So let me just clarify on the what appears to be extra money. That is, we've had a lot of expenses to date in design work and everything else. That's a total amount of money. So I don't have a specific number, but let's just say it's $30,000 that we've spent over the last 2 years getting this ready to this point. That money comes back to the district as a reimbursement. An eligible reimbursement.
It's total project cost, not just this bid.
Exactly, not just the bid, exactly, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, true.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if our general manager is aware of any work that was done in that flume. It was, because I was here when it was put in, and I remember, and I was telling Louie, and I've got pictures of trees growing up in the cracks there, and I, for some reason, remember work being done quite a few years ago. Very expensive work, so I'm wondering, what is the life expectancy of this work? I don't know if the work got done years ago. Louis didn't think so. He's been here 15 years, so he doesn't remember it, but I remember it.
Well, this has been, this work has been designed to a standard, to be able to serve for the purpose that it is, as a drainage channel. Definitely the any trees that have roots that could impact that sidewall need to be removed. They're not part of this contract. I think we'll do it as a separate contract to have those done on that, especially in the upper film. I don't know on the lower sections if there are any, but that may be a change order. I'm not really sure. Here is just to add the trees to it, just because they need to be taken out and stumped ground and that kind of stuff. But
I'm
not aware of any.
Is this a 10-year fix or a 15-year fix? I'm trying to figure out the life of this repair, because I definitely remember we did some work on that around Reservoir 2. The spill drain
concrete,
around it.
Probably we would give this a 50-year life from a fixed asset perspective.
Really?
Yeah, it's reinforced concrete.
I'm just trying to find out what was done before, because I remember it was expensive before, and maybe it didn't last that long. So I'm just
we didn't. I can tell you that what I have seen was not done to an engineering standard.
That's what Louis just said. Okay.
Absolutely not. Because there's no reinforcing steel.
Yeah.
There's varying thicknesses of concrete.
There's no new sections in that at all. So I don't know what work.
Well, I've got the pictures of the trees growing up the cracks, and then maybe they had someone patch it, but it was really expensive, and it didn't seem like it lasted very long. Well, but maybe it lasted 10 years. I don't know, but you're saying 50 years, so that may have just been a temporary fix.
Probably.
Okay. I don't know. I'm going to see.
So, I don't think when you design something like it's customary to estimate lifetime of things, but it's not like a guarantee. I mean, this is being done to full-blown, engineered, reinforced, it's concrete work.
Yeah.
And how long does that last?
I don't remember.
30 years?
Engineered, yeah. I don't
30
remember
years,
the engineering
30 years, 50 years? I mean, you expect a properly designed piece of concrete bitch, but I mean, properly designed, you'd expect it. I would expect it for the last 25, 30, 40 years.
We'll know, won't Will we be told something by the contractor how long it's expected to last, or
They don't give a warranty.
No, I understand that, but don't we have to figure some kind of depreciation?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure what depreciation is for concrete structures. It might be 50 years, typically a normal number that you'd apply to it. I mean, it could last for hundreds.
Steel reinforced concrete as opposed to just in there before. Yeah.
But, you know, there are a lot of things that affect that, too. Let's say you do have a tree that's a ways away that comes down, pokes a branch through it, and then we don't fix it, and then you get water underneath it, and it undermines, and it, you know, there's no support. And, you know, so anyway, it
like anything, it requires maintenance. Mm-hmm. Which I don't think we would maybe going on the flow.
You're right.
Particularly a long period of time. Any further public comment? Any other board discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? So we have approval of 35-18 resolution. And with that, then we'll return.
Second.
Move second to return. Please, somebody second.
All in favor.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? We're returned at 11:05.